Harper Audio presents The Cocktail Waitress by James M. Cain. Performed by Amy Rubinate. Chapter 1. I first met Tom Barclay at my husband's funeral, as he recalled to me later, though he made so little impression on me at the time that I had no recollection of ever having seen him before. Mr. Garrick, the undertaker, was in the habit of calling student aid at the university for boys to help him out, but one of the chosen that day, a junior named Dan Lacey, couldn't come for some reason, and his father asked Tom as a favor to go in his place. Tom, though he graduated the year before, did the honors with me, calling for me and bringing me home in a big, shiny limousine. But he rode up front with the driver, so we barely exchanged 5 words, and I didn't even see what he looked like. Later, he admitted he saw what I looked like. Not my face, as I was wearing a veil, but my beautiful legs, as he called them. If I paid no attention to him, I had other things on my mind. The shock of what had happened to Ron, the tension of facing police, and the sudden, unexpected glimpse of my sister-in-law's scheme to steal my little boy. Ethel is Ron's sister, and I know quite well it's tragic that as a result of surgery she can never have a child of her own. I hope I allow for that. Still and all, it was a jolt to realize that she meant to keep my Tad. I knew she loved him, of course, when I went along with her suggestion, as we might call it, that she take him until I could readjust and get back on my feet. But that she might love him too much, that she might want him permanently, was something I hadn't even dreamed of. I caught on soon enough, though, when she came over at Graveside. Leaving Jack Lucas, her husband, and Mr. and Mrs. Medford, her parents, who of course were also Ron's parents, she first shook hands with Dr. Weeks, and I suppose thanked him for the beautiful service he'd conducted, and then came over to me. "Well, Joan," she began, "you got what you wanted at last. I hope you're satisfied." "What's that supposed to mean?" I asked her.
"I think you know."
"If I did, I wouldn't be asking. Say it."
"Well, the police certainly thought it funny, as everyone else did, you putting him out in the rain, in nothing but his pajamas, so he had to drive somewhere to get taken in. And if he crashed on a culvert wall, I don't think you were really surprised, or much upset."
"I put him out," I told her, "after he came home drunk at 2 o'clock Sunday morning, woke me hollering for another beer, and then got the bright idea of punishing Tad for something he did week before last, and Tad still healing from the last time. I knew nothing about the car he had borrowed over the weekend, which must have been at the curb, keys still in the ignition, for him to be able to drive off the way he did. Nor did I pay much attention when I looked out and found him gone. By that time, nothing he did or could do would surprise me, and as soon as I got Tad quiet, I went to bed. It wasn't until the afternoon, when he was finally identified, that I found out what had happened to him. So if you think I planned it that way, you're mistaken."
"So you say."
"And so you'll say, too."
"I beg your pardon, Joan."
"Say it, Ethel, what I told you to say, that you're mistaken, or I'm slapping your face right here, in front of Dr. Weeks, in front of the Medfords, in front of Ron's friends, in a way you won't forget. Ethel?"
"I was mistaken."
"I thought you were."
"I said it. I don't think it."
"What you think means less than nothing to me. What you say does, and it better correspond." We stood there glaring at each other, but then ice water began to drip down my back. It crossed my mind, suppose she really gets mean and tells me to come get Tad. I thought, I can't take him yet, as I can't work if I have to stay with him. And I had to get work to eat and also pay for him, as of course I couldn't just sponge his keep off Ethel. I felt myself
Sample complete. Ready to continue?